Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hour of Truth with Coach FT. I'm your host, Frank Thomas. I'm a man of God, disguised as a coach, consultant, speaker, and author of the forthcoming book, Rise, Even Death Can't Stop Me. This is my debut book about overcoming a childhood marred by parental addictions, abandonment, adversity, and bad choices, and how I turned everything that could have been a reason to quit into a reason to succeed. Thank you for tuning in. Whether you're listening to live, replay, or podcast, I'm honored that you would take part of your day to allow me the opportunity to speak into your life. That's a privilege as far as I'm concerned, and one thing I take very seriously. When I was approached about this opportunity to do this show, I was excited because I know I've been purposed for this. It's not a mistake that you're here and that we're here together. Before we get started with the show, let me share a couple of housekeeping items with you. You know, this show isn't meant to be a monologue. I look forward to having fruitful discussions with you, the listeners. I will do my best to take as many calls as I can during every show. I'll probably speak a lot more on this show than any other show in the future because I want to let you know who I am and what I stand for. But if you have a question or comment today, please call in. By all means, the call-in number is area code 619-393-2918. Again, area code 619-393-2918. So who is Frank Thomas, Coach FT? Many of you listening live today know me personally. However, how well do we know each other? The answer to that question, we know each other as much as we've allowed one another to see. Some of you listening right now know me very well. Others are still learning about me and me about you. Today's topic is about getting naked by allowing oneself to be vulnerable, authentic, and transparent, knowing that being naked, philosophically speaking, is the only way to be free. Everybody's got a story. What's your story? 22 years ago, I sat in a cell in the middle of the Polk County Jail in Des Moines, Iowa, facing 60 years in prison for a crime my mother committed, and she allowed me to take the fall. What do you do when the one person who's supposed to protect you and love you the most turns their back on you? My mother was a 16-year-old mother. By the time she was 18, she had two kids. We struggled, not just in physical poverty, but mental poverty, probably up until the time I was 19. You know, by the time I was 12 years old, I knew that things were bad, difficult, rough. As a matter of fact, as a 12-year-old boy, I felt like a man, except I wasn't. I was a kid, and on many occasions, I was expected to be a man. As a matter of fact, there was one day specifically when I was sitting in the office of my uncle, who happened to be an uncle by marriage. He was married to my mother's sister, and on many occasions throughout my childhood, I was sent to him to ask for money to take care of some of the necessities that we were missing. Food, utilities, things that we had fallen short on as a family. And this one specific day, as I sat in his office, I swallowed my pride. It was hard to look him in the eyes. As a matter of fact, my eyes hit the floor. And I began to weep, crying uncontrollably, choking on tears. My uncle is looking at me and he asks, "What's wrong?" And I couldn't respond. I was just choking. And then immediately he knew what was wrong. He grabbed his checkbook. He wrote me a check for $500. And he stands up and he hands it to me. And then he goes into his pocket. My uncle was a successful businessman. And he pulls off five $100 bills off the money clip he had in his pocket. And he walks over to the bookcase in the middle of his office, and he grabs an encyclopedia off of his bookshelf, the letter F, and he says, "Do you see this? This is the letter F for Frank." He said, "There will always be $500 in this. You get what you need. Do you understand me?" And in that moment, I lost myself in him. I couldn't look him in the eyes. I made a decision that day that would haunt me in my future. A decision that seemed so small and trivial at that time ended up being one of the most devastating decisions I've made in my life. That decision was that I would never, ever ask anyone for help ever again. So as you fast forward many years, I suffered. There were times when I needed help, but I wouldn't ask. My pride wouldn't allow me, based on the events of that day. I became 19 years old. There I was, a man, at least by the world standards. You see, I have yet to meet a 18 or 19-year-old adult. The human brain isn't even fully developed until we're 25, except many, we're called adults at the age of 20 or at the age of 18, and we're expected to make choices and decisions about our lives that we're not even fully capable of understanding the magnitude of those choices. And, you know, that's fine if you have supportive parents who don't give you or put you in a place where you're to make choices that can impact you in a positive or negative way. They guide your decision-making. But many people who don't have the luxury of parents, two parents to guide them, or who don't have the ability to hide out in college between the ages of 18 and 22 or 23, are asked to make choices in a period of time where they're not capable of making decisions that would impact them for the rest of their lives. And they end up making choices that end up impacting the remainder of their days. You know, at 19, I was a man. I was expected to learn how to figure it out. And it just so happens at that point in time, my mother happened to be dealing drugs. And not long after that, I actually began dealing drugs too. 3 weeks after I began dealing drugs, I got caught. I ended up pleading guilty to a felony. Ultimately, I moved away from my family because I realized that I had a future ahead of me, but I needed to get away from the despair that I had grown up in. I moved to Southern California from the Midwest, and I began to work a job. Here I was, a convicted felon, looking for work. And it was hard. It was the middle of the Persian Gulf War in 1991. The country was in an economic recession, and I'm looking for a job. I ended up finding one. I actually went to an employment agency, an agency where you had to actually pay them 60% of your first month's wages in order to help them have them help you get a job. I got a job making $6 an hour. I worked that job, and I was happy to have that job. But within 3 months after starting that job, I ended up being in the middle of a layoff, and the plant manager had an office that sat in the middle of the plant. He had glass walls on all four sides, and he called people one at a time, laying them off. I was the last person hired. So as he called people one at a time, I'm sitting there working, waiting to hear my name, and the horn went off that day to end the shift. And as he came walking down out of his office, descending down the flight of stairs. I looked up at him, and I asked him, "Do I come back tomorrow?" And he told me, "You're darn right you come back tomorrow. You keep doing what you're doing, you'll always have a job here." And all I could do was say, "Thank you, Lord," because I needed that job. Fast forward 2 years, I had gotten several promotions. A job I started at $6 an hour. I was making almost $15 an hour. More money than I ever knew anyone in my family to make, at least legally. And in my mind, I said, "I'm going to retire from this company." I basically ran that place for quite a while without having the title. You see, the plant manager relied on me to inspire and motivate the rest of the crew to do uncommon things. Until one day, I just felt that I wasn't appreciated very much, because he came down out of his office because there was a specific order that was supposed to be shipped to Saudi Arabia that wasn't going out on time, and he came down on me. And he was an old retired Navy guy, and he cussed like a sailor, and he cussed me out that day, and he caught me off guard because I'd never spoken to him that way. And he told me, "Why in the heck isn't this order going out? What in the world is going on?" And he had more choice language to describe it. But he caught me off guard, and I said, "I've never disrespected you. I've never called you out of your name. I'm a man before I'm anything." And he told me to calm down because I was upset, and I just walked away. And in that moment, I had a revelation. That revelation was that I was too smart to get stuck there. And I knew that the only way out was to get an education. Yeah, a convicted felon, going to college. What business did I have going to college? My life was over. Convicted felons never do anything. They're the scum of the world. They're the ones who have made the biggest mistakes. They're pariahs. Yet, I didn't view myself that way. I viewed myself as a person who made a mistake. So I went to college. As a matter of fact, I started going to college part-time at night. And I took two classes that first semester, and I got two A's. I took one class in the summer, and I got an A. And I started to believe that I could do it. Lo and behold, every semester that I took courses, I got straight A's. And I remember thinking to myself, if I went to school part-time for the rest of my life, it would take me forever. So I made a plan. And that plan was, I was going to quit my job and go to school full-time. Now, there were naysayers. I mean, if you can imagine, I already had my own self-doubts because I'd been convicted of a felony just 2 or 3 years earlier. But I knew in my heart of hearts that I knew I could do it. So I ended up quitting my job. I saved up as much money as I can, and I ended up quitting my job. And I started school full-time one fall. And I remember going to the counseling center, and I asked the counselor, "I want to make sure that I've taken every class that I needed to in order to transfer the following fall with junior status to a four-year university." And he asked me what my Social Security number was so he could pull up my transcript. And he said, "Frank, what school do you want to transfer to?" And I lived in San Diego at the time. And I told him, "San Diego State." He said, "San Diego State? Why San Diego State?" My response was, with a chuckle, "Because I live in San Diego." And he told me, "Frank, have you ever thought about going to a better school? You ever thought about a Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford?" And I just laughed. And I said, "Yeah, of course. Anyone who's in college knows that Those are the creme de la creme of colleges and universities. I said, but you don't get it. I can't afford that. I'm all on my own. And he told me, Frank, with your grades, they'll almost pay you to go. You need to look into some better schools. Well, rewind about 5 or 6 years earlier when I first stepped foot in Southern California. I had this vision, and the vision was that this is where my dreams are going to come true. I wasn't in any hurry to leave Southern California and leave the vision that I had for my life. So those Ivy League schools on the East Coast were not part of my plan. I looked into Stanford. Stanford didn't have an undergraduate business program, and I knew I wanted to do business. And the only way I knew I wanted to do business is because of that uncle who took the time to look after me the best he could, even though he had his own family. I wanted to be just like him. He was a business person, and he resembled everything that I wanted to be. So Stanford didn't have an undergraduate business program. I looked at UCLA, and UCLA didn't have an undergraduate business program because, and UCLA, I grew up being a big-time college basketball fan, so I knew about UCLA, and because they didn't have an undergraduate business program, I had to look further. I looked at USC, and they did have an undergraduate business program, and I didn't know much about USC, to be honest with you. I didn't really like college football, which USC is really known for. I was an NFL football fan. So I scheduled a day to take an all-day campus tour to sit through information sessions surrounding financial aid and student life. I remember getting in my car early one morning, 5 o'clock, driving from San Diego to Los Angeles. I arrived at 7:30 in the morning. I sat in my car until about 8 o'clock when this tour was going to start. And that day that I spent on that campus, I thought USC's campus was the most beautiful place I had ever been in my life. As a matter of fact, when I got in my car to drive to San Diego that night, I cried all the way back. And I said, I don't care how much it costs to go to school there at USC. That's where I'm going. Well, you see, I applied, and I got accepted. But I got the financial aid statement, and there was no way I was ever going to be able to afford that tuition. I applied for scholarships. I did everything I, you know, knew to do. And then one day, I just reduced myself to going to San Diego State, which was my backup plan. And I went to the mailbox late in April, and in the mailbox there was a letter from USC, and I couldn't imagine what it was for. I opened up the letter, and the letter said, Dear Mr. Thomas, congratulations. You have been awarded a Transfer Dean Scholarship. I fell to my knees, and I cried. I cried. I couldn't believe that I had gotten a scholarship. And that scholarship actually made it more affordable for me to go to USC than to San Diego State. Well, I spent 2 years on USC's campus, and graduation time came. My mother actually came to the graduation. By that time, we had reconciled. I forgave my mother. And if my mother's listening right now, I want you to know I love you. No matter what, you know, I forgive you. I've forgiven you. And this is for everyone who's listening today. If you have someone who's done something to you that, you know, caused you tremendous pain, you would do yourself a favor. And that person, forgive them. Let it go. My mother showed up at that graduation. No one knew all that we had gone through in order to stand in that moment. I was actually the student commencement speaker at my college graduation. I gave a speech in front of all my peers. Their parents and friends, the faculty and staff of the School of Accounting at USC. And after I gave that speech, I had people come up to me afterwards and say that that was the most powerful speech that they'd ever heard in their life. And all I could do was be humble. The last person I hugged was my mother. We hugged and we cried. No one knew all the pain we endured to stand in that moment that day. And I knew something in that moment. In that moment, I knew that my past does not define my destiny unless I allow it, and that people are greater than their circumstances. You see, transparency, vulnerability, authenticity are the way to freedom, to truth. This show is predicated on a blog post that I wrote a couple of weeks ago titled Getting Naked, and I wanted to share it with you. The problem, my sickness, is my ego. I want to be in control. I want to be perceived favorably in the eyes of others. As such, I've become a Jedi master at trying to manipulate people's perception of me because of my own insecurity and fear of being invalidated and deemed unworthy of connection if others knew my worst failures and mistakes. I don't want to be alone, an outsider, a pariah. I want to be held in high esteem too. I don't want to be judged for growing up in poverty or by my worst mistake. It happened over 22 years ago. I was just a kid. I'm not the same person. I've grown and matured. I'm a husband and a father now. So when people ask me, "How are you doing?" my response is always, "I'm great, blessed. How about you?" Quickly taking the focus off of me. While it's true, I am blessed, I'm not always great. As a matter of fact, sometimes I'm going through things. We all are, aren't we? So why is there such a lack of authenticity and transparency and ability to share deeply of our struggles? Why are we so afraid to tell others when we're experiencing difficulties, challenges, or when we fail miserably? Fear of being vulnerable. In the past, being a man in our society, I felt like I had to protect myself. Nature seems to be all about survival of the fittest. Any perceived weakness can and has been used against me. There are people who prey on our weaknesses. I can't be vulnerable or ask for help for the things that cause me the most fear. I felt like I must do everything on my own. I must be self-made. That's what's celebrated. That's the man who is the king of the jungle. My ego won't allow me to ask for help. It's not natural. A man who asks for help is weak and incapable. Not me. I'm not weak. I fought tooth and nail for every inch of ground I've ever received. I would rather walk through hell with gasoline underwear than to have to look another man in the eyes and ask, "Can you help me?" and appear weak. I did that once as a 12-year-old little boy, and I have been reeling ever since. Here's the dichotomy of that 12-year-old little boy's experience. First, when I asked for help, I got what I needed. But it came at the price of my ego being battered and feeling vulnerable and being at the mercy of another person. I lost myself in that person's eyes that day. I felt like I was begging. I felt totally emasculated. Second, whenever I needed help and didn't ask and tried to overcome the obstacles or challenges on my own, I suffered. I suffered mentally and emotionally. Not to mention, most of the time, I either didn't get what I needed, or the price I had to pay to get it on my own was way too costly. This lesson was made so very clear to me as a 19-year-old scared little boy. I had to pay a huge price for that lesson, and it almost cost me my life. Why did my 19-year-old self suffer in silence and try to take matters into his own hands? Why wouldn't my ego let me surrender and get the help that I needed and deserved? The facade. Ever since that day and that experience as a 12-year-old little boy, I've tried to keep from being perceived as weak. I would hide behind a self-created facade and try to manage the perceptions that others had of me. I did my best to make people believe I had the world on a string and I was sitting on a rainbow. The truth is, underneath it all, I was scared. I was scared that my life wouldn't matter, that I wouldn't make a difference in the world, that no one really cared whether I lived or died. I was scared that I would die without ever living up to my God-given potential. I was also scared that people were going to judge me for my past mistake. And the minute I chose to be transparent and free, I'd be ambushed and criticized. In an attempt to protect myself from that kind of public embarrassment, I played small in life. I stopped trying to play bigger because I feared I would put myself in a position to be scrutinized and all my flaws would be exposed and used against me, causing me to want to hide in shame. The solution? Get naked. The only way to obtain true freedom is being completely naked. Until I began to get naked, completely naked, the fear of those mistakes and failures were extorting me. The only way I could get from underneath that extortion was to go public with the very things I was trying hard to hide so no one could use them against me. Otherwise, I would continue to be contained and held hostage. And no matter how successful I became while hiding my mistakes, I would ultimately leave success on the table because I had held something back out of fear of being exposed and humiliated. I'm done playing small. I was created for a purpose and with a destiny much larger than what I've accepted. I have a book coming out soon, and that's exactly what I'm doing, getting naked. For over 22 years, I've been afraid to share my story. I feared judgment. I feared losing the respect of the people I admired and who admired me. If they knew my story, not just the parts I chose to share, therefore manipulating their perception. I feared being naked. I'm tired. I'm tired of hiding and pretending that I have it all together. I'm tired of the charade. I'm not perfect. I've failed many times. I've made countless mistakes. The good news is that Christ says I'm forgiven. What others might think of me because of my imperfections is no longer my concern. I'm letting go of trying to control other people's perceptions. I just simply want to be free. As a friend of mine so eloquently put it, it's none of your business what people think about you. My ego feared letting go and being exposed and humiliated. I finally realized freedom is actually counterintuitive. Whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. Luke 17:33 from the Bible. Living a life of freedom is all about allowing oneself to be naked and let go of control and be completely uncovered, unguarded, and be. Just be. I want to encourage you to free yourself from your past mistakes or failures. Your destiny is not behind you. It's in front of you. All of the mistakes and failures of your past can either propel you forward or choke your vision and keep you from obtaining the mark of your high calling. You choose. Christ chose. The rest is up to you. Be the salt and the light. That's something I shared with the group of people who follow what I write. And I had such overwhelming response. I had people sending me emails telling me thank you, that they were crying while reading it. And I knew I was onto something. I knew that there are people who are hiding, who just want to be free, who don't want to suffer in silence anymore. But someone's gotta speak up. Someone's gotta be the voice. I'll be that. I'll put myself out there so that other people are encouraged to be free. You know, one of the comments that I got from that was from a guy at my church. And he responded to me by saying, "Frank, you are so right. We see each other at church. We exchange pleasantries. But do we really know each other?" And I responded to him, "You know, it's true. Our society is not based on transparency. It's based on manipulation. We try to manipulate people's perception of us. We are always told to display our best. In an attempt to do such, we dress ourselves up to influence people's perceptions of us. But is that truly who we are? Better yet, think about this. If you go on an interview and they ask you to share what your greatest weaknesses are, how do you respond? Most of us respond with the, I work too much, and, you know, because of that, you know, there's no balance in my life. You know, the old positive negative. Because we fear if we tell the interviewer the truth, that we do have flaws, we will not get the job. And you know what? You're right. You probably won't. So we've been the truth because if you tell the truth, you're not going to get the job. That's just a small example of how our world is set up for us to be divided against ourselves. Lastly, I mean, you don't know anyone until they share their testimony of where they were in life at their darkest moments and how they responded. That's when you truly get to know who someone is. Until you have a conversation on that level, that being naked level, you'll be dealing with surface level chatter that pretty much amounts to nothing. I encourage you to be free. If you have a comment or a question, I'm going to repeat the call-in number, 619-393-2918. Again, that's 619-393-2918. You know, it reminds me of one of the quotes that Steve Jobs had in his commencement address to Stanford University in like 2004, 2005. I can't remember which year, but he said something to the extent that when he was 17, he had read a quote that went something like, if you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll be right. And he said that it had made an impression on him. And since, you know, hearing that, he'd look in the mirror every single morning and ask himself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today? And whenever the answer had been no for too many days in a row, he knew he needed to change something. Remembering that that it will be dead soon is the most important tool he's ever encountered, you know, to help him make the big choices, the big decisions in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, all those things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die, I think he said, is the best way that he knew to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose, that you're already naked. There's no reason not to follow your heart. Truth. Getting naked. That's what the show is about. It's about sharing the truth, because that's the only way we'll ever be free. I'm going to close with this. You know, before I close, if you have any comments, you know, about today's show, you can connect with me on social media. My website is www.coachftfrankthomas.com, twitter.com/coachft, or facebook.com/coachft. You know what, I got a question here. Your line is open. What's your question?
Hi, Frank.
Yes.
It's Maeve.
Hi, Maeve. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm listening to you sharing with such incredible strength, and I am really, truly so proud of you and so grateful that you're sharing this story. I know that when people hear what you have to say, that you will touch their lives in such a profound way. And so I'm just phoning in to say thank you for not hiding anymore.
Thank you, Maeve, for the call. I have to tell you that while this has probably been one of the most difficult things that I've had to do in life, it's also the most rewarding. Because as I open up, I've been able to free people. I've had countless people share with me, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because we live in a world that doesn't slow down enough to get to the heart of people. And so I just knew that I couldn't go another day without being transparent and sharing, you know, my story in the hopes that it would encourage someone to begin to understand that no matter what mistakes they've made, no matter what failures that they've had, no matter where they come from, no matter who their parents are, no matter what their parents are, that is not the definition of who they are unless they choose it and that they have a choice. So I thank you for, you know, for that and just sharing that. And I mean, this is an encouragement to me to just keep going. So I appreciate the call.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. Well, it's just important to be free. I think we all, you know, at its most basic level, at that heartfelt level, know what that means. It may mean something different for us all, but we know what it means for us as individuals. And so I encourage you to do whatever it takes to be free. You know what? If you need someone to listen, I'll be that. I know what it feels like to fight those feelings, those emotions, that fear. Fear is a liar, though. Your greatest opportunities, your greatest destiny is just beyond the fear. But you have to make a choice to get beyond it. Let me tell you, there's three real reasons why I decided to share my story. The first one I realized was that this story is bigger than me. As a matter of fact, it's not even about me. There are people in this world who will never, ever step into their God-given destiny until I show up, until I share my story. They need the encouragement, the strength, in order to move forward. And if I never share my story, my life would never be complete, and never would theirs. I chose to show up. I recognize that it's bigger than me. It's not about me. Secondly, everyone has had failures. Everyone's made mistakes. Everyone's made bad choices. Everyone's had bad things happen to them that are no fault of their own. And the truth is that when we hide those things, they keep us playing small in life. Yeah, there are times when we'll get the courage to move forward. There are times when, you know, we'll have just a sense of audacity, of boldness to do something bigger. But the minute that we get pressed against our fear, we'll sit down and shut our mouths. We'll play small again. See, because our fears, they extort us. It's like extortion. See, the minute that you get right to the edge of a breakthrough, you'll be afraid that you'll be exposed and humiliated, and you'll dwarf. And the only way that you ever get from underneath extortion is you must go public. You must share the very things that cause fear. That's when you get your power back. That's when you begin to be free. The last reason I decided to share my story was that I recognized I can work in business, I can help grow businesses, grow my own business, I know how to make money, but the greatest thing I have to offer humanity is my story. The story of how I was at my lowest point, the point where I was broken, the point where I felt like my life just didn't matter, and how Jesus Christ saved me in that moment, picked me up, claimed that I was worthy, me, a kid who grew up with almost nothing, and decided that I believe what he says. I believe the sacrifice that he made for me, that I'm worthy. And I began to walk in confidence. So I just encourage you. It's not over yet. If you hear this, whether you're hearing it right now or you're hearing it on a replay, 50 years from now, I want you to know today is the day for you to stand. Stand in your truth. Get naked. Be free. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't take the time to thank the Lord Jesus Christ, because without his sacrifice, I would be nothing. Thank you for tuning in. I look forward to speaking with you again next Sunday, same time, on Blog Talk Radio's Creating Calm Network. Remember, if life has you down, the only thing left to do is rise. This is Coach FT. God bless you.